May it please the court. On this appeal, we present two points. If we should prevail on either of those points, I believe we prevail on this appeal. The first question is, does this court agree that the Krispy Kreme 1 standard is unworkable, not a reasonable expectation of the General Assembly, and gives no effect to the words prepared far in the operative statute? Would the following standard be a reasonable standard and give meaning to all the statute's words? Quote, food that at the time of preparation the establishment knows will be consumed right away. The second point is whether the commission erred in assigning no weight to the results of the 2012 survey of customers when the only evidence received was that the results were representative of the tax periods. I practiced law for 36 years. I've appeared somewhat regularly before this court. I've never before asked, at least to my recollection, asked this court to overrule one of its prior decisions. I do so today because the standard set in Krispy Kreme 1 is unworkable. It's not what I believe the reasonable expectations of the General Assembly were, and it fails to give meaning to two critical words in the statute, and those words are prepared far. As the court noted in Krispy Kreme 1, Krispy Kreme offered evidence at that time that the time passage between the preparation of the food and its sale, and thus the consumption, was significant, and Krispy Kreme knew this. And in fact, the commission found that as a fact in the Krispy Kreme 1 decision. Whether or not the food was consumed on the premises or off the premises, at the time the food was prepared, Krispy Kreme knew a substantial portion of it would not be sold right away and would sit on a shelf waiting to be sold.
And can I clarify, you obviously know that donuts prepared in large quantities for use by charities and so forth are not going to be consumed until whatever event they're purchased for. Those are not at issue here, is that correct?
That is correct. I wish they were at issue because it would be very easy to meet the standard if they were, but the statute focuses on gross receipts. Gross receipts are from retail sales, not wholesale.
So these are things sold from the individual stores to individual customers,
correct,
whether they buy one donut or two dozen donuts.
Correct.
Why aren't they all prepared for immediate consumption, whether or not they're immediately consumed? You're sort of saying you should look at it from the point of view of the seller saying prepared for, and yet you still have, and I understand from Krispy Kreme 1, but from your point of view, you switch to the point of view of the buyer and whether the buyer actually eats them or not. If we're looking at the reason they were prepared, weren't they all prepared for sale and immediate consumption, whether or not immediately consumed in fact?
I don't believe they were all prepared for immediate consumption. If you look at a Krispy Kreme store, the employees get up.
Far too many, I'm afraid.
Pardon me?
I
wish there were
far
more.
Too many.
I wish there were some in Jefferson City. What they do is the employees get up early, and they make the donuts early, and they make a lot of them, and they sell them throughout the day, and then they make some more again in the evening. So at the time they're preparing these donuts, they know a substantial quantity, certainly more than 20% of them, aren't going to be sold for many hours.
You're saying you have to look at how often after they're prepared they would be sold, but so you're asking us directly overrule the basic holding of Krispy Kreme 1.
Absolutely.
As opposed to prepared for immediate consumption, you prepare them so people who buy them can immediately consume them, whether or not they do.
I think there's a distinction between a sale for immediate consumption, which is the standard I believe this court set in Krispy Kreme 1, mm-hmm, and the words of the statute, which are prepared for immediate consumption. Obviously, if I'm a bakery and I bake a loaf of bread, I'm going to bake many loaves of bread in the morning, and I know they're going to be sold throughout the day. I know when I'm preparing them. They're not prepared for consumption right away. If I'm a restaurant, and somebody sits down and orders a T-bone steak, when I'm grilling that steak, I know it is prepared to be consumed right away. And I think
even if it sits in the store for 4 hours first. I mean, if you make a steak, if you're selling a steak, well, go ahead.
I'm trying to come up with an example where it's obvious that you're preparing something for immediate consumption. If I'm a short order cook in the kitchen and I'm preparing that steak medium well that you just ordered, I know the server's going to take it out to you and you're going to eat it. And so I obviously that's food I'm preparing for immediate consumption. When my bakery bakes 500 loaves of bread in the morning, my bakery knows those are not prepared for immediate consumption because my bakery knows they're not prepared to be sold right away. And we all know the food can't be consumed until after it's sold. And so the standard we offered in Krispy Kreme 1, and it's the standard we're again offering today, and I don't take lightly asking this court to overrule one of its decisions, but that standard gives meaning to the words prepared for. And that's why we ask you.
Well, wouldn't you're saying prepared for immediate sale? It doesn't say that. It says prepared for immediate consumption. So what do we mean by what do you think the legislature meant by using the word consumption and not sale?
I believe we're using terminology that focuses on consumption. As a matter of proof, however, we know consumption occurs after sale. So we're saying if you sell the product a substantial period of time after it's prepared, and you know that's going to be the fact. You know it's not going to be consumed until substantially after it's prepared. You meet the standard. And the beauty of that standard, giving meaning to all the words of the statute, is the vendor doesn't have to engage in surveying its customers after the fact, after the customers have made their purchases and paid their tax. It's a standard that allows vendors to sell food at the low rate at these establishments. And the lower rate is to benefit consumers. And they will certainly benefit. And Krispy Kreme isn't the only establishment that has this issue.
But you don't prepare more than you need because then it goes stale. I mean, if you prepare it too far in advance of sale, then there's sort of not an expiration date, but a date at which it's no longer, just like you said with the bread, then you have the old bread. If you don't sell the bread when you bake it and it takes a day, then it's called day old bread and it's not the same as it was when you prepared it to begin with. And if you keep the donuts more than a certain period of time, they become stale and people won't want to consume it.
That's true. And certainly.
And so you have to think ahead about how much you're preparing for quote unquote immediate sale, immediate consumption, so that the customer is going to have fresh, they hope to have fresh product.
Certainly Krispy Kreme doesn't want to overproduce. They, early in the mornings, they produce enough for the day to be sold throughout the course of the day. And I'll tell you a little trick about donuts, particularly Krispy Kreme donuts. When they do go stale, you can pop them in the microwave for 7 seconds and they're good as new. So, it's a valid point, Judge. No vendor wants to overproduce. But the fact of the matter is.
And in fact, there's like a Krispy Kreme place somewhere on Highway 55 in Lindbergh where they actually have like a red light saying freshly produced donuts. So you come right on in and you know you got the freshly produced stuff right there.
There are some donuts that Krispy Kreme knows when they're preparing them are going to be consumed right away because they're going to be taken to the counter, somebody's going to buy them the first 15 minutes after they're prepared while that light is on, and certainly some of their donuts are prepared for immediate consumption, but a lot of them are not.
So, counsel, how should the legislature have worded the statute to accomplish the purpose that the state is saying that was their intent?
I think what this... You're asking me about the state's construction of the statute?
Well, how could they improve it to do what you're saying?
The state's position is that these items are for immediate consumption, meaning they're going to be eaten soon after their purchase, not immediately, but maybe soon after the purchase. And you're saying the statute doesn't say that. What should they have said to accomplish what the state's position is?
Sold for immediate consumption.
Sold.
Mm-hmm. And in fact, if you look at your decision, Krispy Kreme 1, if you go to page 53 of that decision, you'll see what the court said is donuts may be consumed immediately upon purchase, regardless of whether they were prepared more than or less than an hour before purchase. So I think that was the fundamental problem with Krispy Kreme 1, is the statute says prepared for immediate consumption, not sold for immediate consumption.
Is there some in between? Because you're saying, and I understand your argument, that sold for immediate consumption would fit with their argument, but prepared for immediate sale would fit your argument. But in fact, it uses half each and says prepared for immediate consumption. They probably don't mean by the employees. So what do they mean?
Well, and when I'm focusing on how I prove prepared for immediate consumption, the way I prove it is by showing the delay between production and sale. But the standard, I think what the court was saying, excuse me, what the legislature was saying, is we want to focus on food that the vendor knows when it's preparing it is prepared to be consumed right away. Obvious examples come to mind, McDonald's French fries, the T-bone steak example. And the food that would not be prepared for immediate consumption would be things like what the director concedes, bread, loaves of bread. Dozens of donuts and loaves of bread are not that different. And the operations of a bakery and the operations of Krispy Kreme stores are not that different.
Now, occasionally counsel brings demonstrative evidence. Did you happen to bring any demonstrative evidence?
I am not allowed during Lent to have demonstrative evidence of that nature.
Darn the Lent.
And the second issue we raise, again, this is in 36 years, I'm not sure I've ever brought this type of issue before the court either, and that is a challenge to the commission's finding of to give no weight. The commission said little weight, but it actually gave no weight to the critical survey in this case. And I see I'm out of time. Thank you.
We'll hear from you on rebuttal.
Thank you.
May it please the court, Your Honors. Jeremiah Morgan on behalf of the director again. I suppose if we took our friends from Lewis and Clark that are here and we asked them the question, are Krispy Kreme donuts prepared when they buy it, are they intending to immediately consume it, they would answer unequivocally, I think, yes. And that's the answer I think most people would answer. Now,
but you're using the word sale, not preparation.
No, I think even prepared for immediate consumption. When Krispy Kreme is making those donuts, they are intending that they can be immediately consumed, right? Without further preparation, without need to do anything else to them, you can pull them right off of the box, right out of the drawer that they have there at the store, and immediately consume.
Now, do they prepare dough that they could sell, and that customers could buy it and cook it themselves?
Yeah, no, they don't. They don't prepare dough or some of those things, so that people can then do more to it. Like, for example, you might a pizza place that makes the uncooked pizza. You have to do something that's not something you can take away from the store and you can immediately consume. But
how about the loaves of bread? They could be immediately consumed, they aren't prepared for immediate consumption.
Well, and nobody thinks of a loaf of bread, hey, as I'm on the way home, I'm going to pull out a couple slices and start to eat it. It's typically, we think of loaves of bread, we take it home, and we put it on the shelf, right? And we use it throughout the week. And the reason we can do that is because they make it with preservatives, they make it in such a way, and they package it in certain ways to make it not for immediate consumption, but for later consumption. That's not true with respect to donuts, particularly at a restaurant like this. They don't package them in the way, they don't prepare them in a way that they intend for them to go and be put on the shelf or on the counter. Now, certainly, if I bought a dozen donuts, and I did try to buy that, I tried to bring a demonstrative exhibit, but apparently the independent store is closed down. I was trying to come on the way down, and it was closed down on my way down, which is unfortunate for me. But when you purchase those donuts, nobody stocks up on donuts, right? They don't buy donuts with the intent and purpose that I'm going to eat, particularly Krispy Kreme donuts. And I think this is part of this analysis, too, is considering, we're not talking about a grocery store here where they're buying all kinds of stuff and they may pick up some donuts. This is a special treat. Even their own research and surveys talk about people go because they have a craving, and they go because it's hot. They go because they can be immediately consumed, and that's what their intention is.
And that gets to, I was going to ask, what's the purpose of the state having different tax rates for groceries, for things you're going to consume at home versus the lower tax rate for some items?
The underlying purpose is to make, if we go back to some of the language used in the statute and what it's based upon, is to make nutritional items that they can buy at a store, you know, at a lower, for people to buy those at a lower cost, to make it easier for them to get, when, because this is based on the food stamp program, that that they want to be able to make those kinds of items available. Now, certainly, we can't dispute that if you buy donuts that are, you know, packaged in a certain way at a store, that those are those would qualify, you know, because they're prepared in such a way. Some they have preservatives and different things like that. But if you're going to a restaurant, that's not the kind of food that is typically considered.
And restaurant food's not subject to the lower tax.
No.
And so this test is to help us distinguish things that kind of fall in the middle between those two and to find a way.
So is this like a McDonald's? Is it the same kind of tax rate for someplace like a Wendy's or a McDonald's?
Yeah,
that's
Wendy's,
considered immediate consumption?
Correct, Your Honor. Yes, that's exactly right. Restaurants certainly generally, and that's what the statute says. It includes restaurants, delicatessens, you know, eateries and things like that. That's the gist of it. It doesn't include grocery stores and things like that. When you go to the store and you look at, like go to a convenience store, certainly people can buy something at the convenience store and may eat it in the convenience store or as they're walking out of it. But that doesn't mean that it's prepared for immediate consumption. Most of those things, like a candy bar or a bottle of soda or something like that, are not necessarily made for immediate consumption. They have a long shelf life. They could be there for a long time, and they don't anticipate that.
And so what about the milk and the other products that Krispy Kreme sells? Are those prepared for immediate consumption or no?
Actually, the milk is not prepared by them at all.
So I know.
It's excluded from that. But
okay.
Their hot drinks, for example, those are certainly prepared, or cold drinks that are, you know, fountain drinks and so forth.
So to get to this, was Krispy Kreme correct that they have to survey what their customers actually do, whether they actually consume them immediately, or is the question whether Krispy Kreme prepares them so they can be consumed immediately?
As I read the standard, I think the analysis can be made without respect to a survey or something like that. Is this the type of food? Is this even? And I think the factors that you would look at, one of the factors might be, what do consumers actually do? I don't think that's necessarily the controlling factor or ought to be the only way to answer this question. I think you look at it in terms of, I should keep saying the way to look at these things would be something like, is it the type of food that is preserved for a long period of time in the kind of state that it's can be consumed? Or is it something that is, as Judge Teitelman talked about, you know, we contemplate, or we're very familiar with the concept of day-old donuts, the day-old things. And if that's the case, you know, you look at, if I was to put on proof, I suppose, I would look at things like, how are they preserved? How are they presented? What kind of packaging do they have? All of those things that would go into, is this item prepared for immediate consumption? And there's lots of indicators of that. I mean, if it's packaged in such a way that is intended to preserve it, intended to be put on a shelf, you know, things like that. I mean, nobody has a shelf that, you know, perfectly fits a Krispy Kreme dozen donut box. You know, they're packaging it. You look at the packaging difference between even Krispy Kreme donuts that they sell in the store, which are wholesale, versus the one they sell at the restaurant. They're in completely different packaging, right? So they're preparing those. They're even packaging them, not necessarily for immediate consumption, but to put them at those that are purchased at a store, to put them on the shelf or something like that. Now, I digress into the issue, the secondary issue, which is their efforts to overturn Krispy Kreme 1. Really, this case can be resolved quite easily on the first issue that has not been addressed yet, and I want to spend just a moment on that. And that is, the commission determined that the evidence in this case, which was a survey presented by Krispy Kreme, in a survey that was conducted in 2012 for the purposes of this litigation in order to prove or try to prove consumption habits in 2003 and 2005. Now we certainly disputed its admissibility before the commission, and I want to talk a little bit about that. But the commission went on to conclude that given the weaknesses of that as evidence and so forth, gave it little weight. And the question is, what kind of standard is that determination subject to?
Did they give it little weight or no weight?
Well, the commission said little weight, and I take the commission for their words in that. Didn't say no weight, but even with little weight, if it's given little weight, it still has to meet a preponderance. And so the commission.
So what was the countervailing evidence? If it was given little weight, that was some weight. What did they weigh it against?
Nothing. We did not present evidence other than cross examination. But this court has said over and over again, the person that doesn't bear the burden doesn't have to put on evidence to prevail in a case. So it may be as a practical matter that it was given no weight, but that's the commission said given little weight. But even best analogy I could think of would be, I'll give it 10% weight. That still doesn't get you over 50%. That's a poor analogy, but you can still have something with little weight.
There could be a few things that by themselves would not be convincing, but together would be. But right. It was by itself.
Yeah, by itself, or that it didn't produce a preponderance of the evidence that support the claim in this case. So whether it's no weight or little weight, it didn't meet that evidence.
What's the standard of review?
The standard of review generally is the one adopted by Big Boy and those that followed Hampton.
Remember that case well.
What's that?
I remember that case well.
Yes, you wrote that case, yes. And that is against the weight of the evidence, and is it contrary to law and so forth. But here, it's slightly different because what we're talking about they're appealing is the decision of the commission to give little weight to that, to the only evidence that they have. And that's different because then we're talking about language from this court and other courts that says, when you're talking about credibility or the weight of the evidence, that's a decision that's where the commission or a court is the sole judge of that.
So you're basically saying nobody has to accept what an expert says. If we said that you couldn't hold contrary to the expert, you'd be given that dispositive weight.
Right, yes. And so what is that standard? How do you review something that's given to the commission or to a court as the sole judge of that? Maybe it's abuse of discretion. I think it's more likely in the case, at least a couple of cases, and a couple that were cited by Krispy Kreme, suggested sort of arbitrary and capricious, and that makes some sense. And that is, did they arbitrary and capriciously reject evidence that should have been accepted?
Can you address the statute that says that surveys can be admitted and how
yes.
that affects the analysis?
Which goes to my second part of this same point, and that is, we don't think that the survey evidence should have been admissible at all. It's an internet survey. It was not the subject of interviews. It was not the foundation upon which an opinion was given that said we think that these donuts or this percentage of donuts were consumed or prepared for immediate consumption. It did not form the foundation of it. It was just an internet questionnaire that was used. Didn't have the kind of reliability, the kind of things that cases over and over again have looked to determine whether or not a survey could be admitted. And to the point on section 536.070, which does provide for surveys in the context of administrative hearing commissions, but it doesn't provide for surveys that are based upon incompetent evidence. It doesn't open the door and undermine this court's or court's case law that limits the admission of surveys, that there has to be some reliability to those. And in 536.070, it talks about the results of statistical examinations or studies or of audits, compilations of figures or surveys involving interviews with many persons or examination of many records. Okay. It requires a level of analysis that just is not in this case. I'm not saying that, and we're certainly not saying that surveys cannot be admissible, but the survey here which was not based upon...
What about the section of the statute that says all the circumstances relating to the making of such a survey and other things, including the nature and extent of the qualifications of the maker, may be shown to affect the weight of such evidence, but such showing shall not affect its admissibility?
Right.
Does that create a special standard here?
No, I don't believe it creates a special standard. The underlying evidence still has to be competent. I mean, and this is how it's...
Why shouldn't the commission be given the same level of deference on admissibility that your suggestion should be given to weight? Why doesn't, as the fact finder, why don't we let it decide both? We give it some discretion in whether or not it's admissible. In this case, they did. They said it's admissible, but it just doesn't tilt the scale.
Yeah.
What's the difference in really giving the fact finder those types of discretion?
No difference at all. I completely agree with you that we ought to give deference to the fact finder on this. But the argument I'm making, though, is that their interpretation is contrary to the law. And
you're saying they couldn't go out and ask three people and say it was a survey.
Exactly. There's
a lot of space in between for discretion.
Right. And it may be that it's not really dispositive in this case. And it may be that the survey is perfectly fine, but in the views of this court. But here, the what they adopted is something that has been rejected by other courts. And that's also on abuse of discretion. That's also on that same kind of review. So I agree that it is subject to that same standard of review, and I'm not disputing that. But even with that, it's, I believe, an incorrect interpretation of 536.070, and courts have routinely rejected this type of survey evidence as not competent.
But if we disagree with you, you would still argue the statute also gives them discretion as to the weight to be given it, and we should defer to that.
And which is the point of that provision as well. Even if it's admissible, the commission has the authority to determine the weight to give to it. And here, the commission looked at it and said, for several reasons, we give little weight to that evidence. So for that reason, as well as the secondary reason, that this is Krispy Kreme donuts are not food items prepared for immediate consumption, I ask this court affirm the commission in this case.
Thank you.
Judge Stiff, you asked what was the purpose of this statute. The law already provided a complete exemption from sales tax for any purchases of food made with food stamps. So the purpose of this section of the law was to grant a break to other purchasers of food, those that weren't redeeming food stamps to make their purchases. And the types of things that Krispy Kreme sells that you could buy in a grocery store with food stamps: bottled water, cartons of milk, bottled juice, bags of coffee beans, donuts. A significant portion of what Krispy Kreme sells, someone with food stamps could buy at a grocery store, even Krispy Kreme donuts at a grocery store with food stamps.
Well, under your argument, we'd never get to the 80-20 test that you're saying, because we should find it's all the kind of thing that...
No. We have to prove
that...
The combination of donuts that were not prepared for immediate consumption and things not prepared by the store, like bags of coffee beans, bottles of juice, bottles of water, cartons of milk, comprised more than 20% of the retail sales. You see the catch-22 my client is in here. The court set a standard, and it's on page 53. Food prepared for immediate consumption on or off the premises means all food that is eaten at the place of preparation and purchase, or while traveling to, or immediately upon arrival at another location without any further preparation. That's the standard. How do we prove that standard without surveying customers? And yet the Director of Revenue says, you can't survey your customers, you can't introduce that into evidence to prove the standard.
One of the things that we have to realize, of course, is when we say catch-22, it's almost like you're saying your client's disadvantaged. Your client's getting a windfall. You're not giving back the 1% to your customers and say, oh, we're going to reduce your prices because we got this windfall. You're going to get a windfall, and the money doesn't go back to the customers.
There's certainly nothing in the record to that effect, Judge. And I will tell you, standing here today, I don't know what my client will do with the money. I know this. In Six Flags 2, This court said that's irrelevant legally. And I will also
tell you that on the argument of admissibility. I mean, they considered your survey. They just said it didn't have much weight.
I think they gave it no weight, but they
and
said
so
little weight.
So you're saying they're bound by your expert if they don't present a contrary expert? Because I know there's cases saying that's not, the jury certainly doesn't have to accept expert testimony.
Well, what I'm saying is the standard that I believe this court set in Hampton is that
record as a whole, but
the record as a whole, is there sufficient, competent, substantial evidence to support the award?
So if there's only one expert, are you saying you have to accept what the expert says is true? Isn't that the result of what you're saying when you're saying you couldn't find the other way? And is there any case that's ever said that about expert testimony?
I'm not really saying that. What I'm saying is you don't blindly, this court does not blindly follow whatever the commission said. I think there is a role for this court.
But do you think the commission had the right to reject the expert's testimony, or was it bound to accept it?
I'm not going to call these witnesses all experts.
Well, okay.
The witnesses that linked the 2012 survey to the tax periods weren't really experts. One was the manager of the stores, the other was the marketing VP, brand development. And what they did was they testified that nothing has changed, and therefore you should apply this
survey. And you're right, in reading the commission decision, they seem to more question the connection between the time of the survey and the current time, or the time under consideration, rather than the survey itself.
What I think the commission said is you didn't present direct evidence showing that you interviewed your customers during the tax periods and asked them these questions.
But
without that direct evidence, it isn't enough.
But isn't that the type of credibility or weight evaluation that fact finders make all the time? The more remote the evidence is to the relevant time period, kind of the less weight people give it, just based upon basic human factors.
It is the type of decision the fact finder makes regularly, but it is also a decision for this court to review on the whole record. And what we're suggesting here is, given the standard, given the mountain of evidence we presented, to just dismiss it without challenging the credibility of the witnesses. The commission did not find the witnesses not credible.
But they did find them interested.
The commission said they're interested, but that's a far cry. In a tax case,
absolutely.
Every witness is interested in a tax case.
Counsel, before you sit down, you suggested they make a batch of donuts in the morning to last for the day. Is there any difference in the way they prepare those donuts for the first one sold and the one that's sold at 4:30 in the afternoon?
As I understand the record, they produce them all, they're in all a short period of time
prepared
in the morning,
the same.
And they're sold throughout the day.
But they're all prepared the same.
There's not different preservatives or something else?
No,
stay later?
No different preservatives,
so
far as I know.
You could pick one of the 500 at random if you're the first customer in the door.
True.
Thank you.
Can I ask?
Certainly.
When you go to White Castle or McDonald's, they have chairs and places for you to eat or immediately consume your food. Is Krispy Kreme have tables and chairs and whatnot set up in there?
They do, Your Honor. And there's no doubt some of the food products are consumed in the store.
Any other questions? Thank you. Case will be submitted.